The Senate put the brakes on the proposed auto bailout last night and said no to $14 billion in emergency loans for the Detroit Three. Now what? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 10 past 7 on this Friday, December the 12th. We'll wonder what the failure of the rescue plan in the Senate last night means for the automakers and the economy. And we will welcome your questions and reactions for our guest analyst. Do you want the White House to tap the $700 billion Wall Street bailout money to help the Detroit automakers make it until the new Congress convenes? Or what? Our guest is Bruce Belzowski, Associate Director of the Automotive Analysis Division at the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning.
Is this a shocker for you?
Well, it is in some ways, and in other ways it's not. When you look at from the political aspect, it's not. It wasn't completely surprising. The Republicans had refused to negotiate with the Democrats and the White House up to this point. So they came in on really late in the negotiations and and tried to put their stamp on the legislation. When you could see the legislators taking that long, they must have either, you know, really felt that they didn't really want to do it at all in the first place. So I thought that wasn't as surprising, but you know, given the circumstances that we're in today, the issue of the economy and the jobs that are potentially to be lost from the failure of General Motors and Chrysler, you would have thought that that the congressman would have had been more focused on, you know, kind of the long-term issues here and for the economy, but it seems like that did not pan out.
Yeah. So how devastating do you say this would be if Chrysler or GM in particular runs out of money before the end of the year?
Well, they if we believe what they've been telling us, and you know, I guess we on good faith assume that what they're telling us was true all along, they really didn't have, they had been looking for sources of funding to keep their operations going and resorted to the government because there were no other sources that were willing to lend them money. So they say that they will continue to do that, but they also have contacted lawyers for potential bankruptcy.
Yeah, so what are the consequences should GM and or Chrysler have to declare bankruptcy?
Well, the challenge with, as you know, as people have talked about this issue in this context, it's been difficult because in Chapter 11 bankruptcy, where you're reorganizing and you break all your contracts and all your pensions and all those things, and you get to start afresh, that's the good news. The bad news is that you have to find financing to have someone support you while you're going through that reorganization. We have an example of that in one of GM's major suppliers, Delphi Corporation. They have been in bankruptcy now for probably 2 to 3 years. They were almost ready to come out of bankruptcy this past spring, but the funding that they were expecting fell through. So they're still in bankruptcy. And probably in getting close to the point where a bankruptcy judge will say, well, it looks like you guys really don't seem to have enough support, you may have to go into Chapter 11 and start liquidating your business.
Yeah,
and this could apply to GM and Chrysler as well.
We did hear Barbara Boxer and other Democratic lawmakers in our newscast this morning saying they want the White House to tap the $700 billion Wall Street bailout money to tide over GM and Chrysler. How hopeful are you that that will happen?
I just can't put any odds on that. You know, they were reluctant to do it before. They wanted the Congress to tap the $25 billion that had already been appropriated to the auto industry, which is what Congress ended up doing, and they couldn't agree to the how it would be distributed. Of course, so we're now waiting to see if the administration will tap that. I was reading today that there's not a whole lot of money left in that first $350 billion that they were advanced by Congress. there is another $350 billion that's available, but they have to go back to Treasury has to go back to Congress to request it. That was part of the original deal. So that all of that, the final 350 isn't even available yet. So it's whatever's left of the original 350. I've also been reading that the Federal Reserve is also an option, that based on what had happened during the Depression, they were given the power to loan money to entities if they felt that it was necessary.
So not all hope for a rescue for the automakers is gone?
That's right.
Yeah. We are talking with Bruce Belzowski, Associate Director of the Automotive Analysis Division at the University of Michigan's Transportation Research Institute. He's talking with us about what happened last night in the U.S. Senate. The Senate said no to emergency loans for the Detroit automakers. What's your reaction? Are you pleased or upset over this? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 17 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, December the 12th. Coming up later today, it's At Issue with Ben Marins. Time Magazine's Person of the Year will be announced next week. After 5 today, Ben will invite you to call in with your idea for the Person of the Year. That's coming up after 5. We're talking about the auto bailout, the brakes being put on the auto bailout last night by the U.S. Senate. What now? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Before we go to the phones, Bruce Belzowski, it sounds as though this rescue plan for $14 billion went down because Republican senators were insisting on immediate wage cuts, wage concessions from the UAW, and the union said no. I mean, would that have made a huge difference, the union agreeing to immediate wage cuts?
Well, it's an interesting issue, of course. It was one of the big issues, and what's been reported out of the Congress was that was the deal breaker. They asked the UAW workers to accept the same pay, benefits, and the work rules as employees of the import brand factories in the U.S., so that became one of the three issues. The other two issues were that the Detroit Three companies had to convert at least 2/3 of their debt to equity by March 31st, or either repay the loans or file for bankruptcy protection. This was also going to be a big challenge because their suppliers is where they have so much of their debt, and the suppliers to take equity instead of debt, instead of cash, may actually have bankrupted them as well. And the third thing was that that half of the Detroit 3 payments to UAW-administered health trusts for retired workers would be in stock, not cash. So this was something that had been negotiated from 2007.
We have a clip from Senator Richard Shelby of Alabama. This was Yeah, he was he's probably the most outspoken critic of the bailout proposal. But I want you to react to his reasoning.
All right. Unless Chrysler, Ford, and General Motors become lean and innovative and competitive in the marketplace, this is only delaying their funeral.
So, is he right?
Well, he was absolutely right, but the issue was that all of these things could have been worked out between now and the end of the first quarter if the bailout package that would have been part of the bailout package, was that they would have to work this out by the end of the first quarter, and it would bring all the parties to the table. It'd bring suppliers, dealers, creditors, to the manufacturers, as well as labor, to the table to work through the issues and how the companies could best deal with this, rather than have a kind of response that they were putting out this time.
Well, our lines are full, so let's take some calls. Bill in Reidsville, hi, you're on the air. Hello,
yeah,
Bill.
I have to say that I think auto executives and everybody. I think they've done a terrible job of running their companies. But on the other hand, I don't think you can really cast all these employees of these companies aside. And part of me, I hate to think it, but maybe all these Republicans in the Senate, you know, I hear Mitch McConnell saying we're not going to throw bad money or good money after bad and all this stuff. Well, they've already thrown $350 billion away pretty much. And part of me thinks that maybe they just like to saddle the incoming administration with such a mess that they'll never be able to get out of it, and then they get to regroup their forces and hope that they can come back in the next election and maybe get back in the saddle.
Yeah. I don't know, Bruce Belzowski, if you can really react to whether Republicans
are... I think that there is something to be said for that, mm-hmm. that was... But I think the new administration was going to be saddled with the with this challenge no matter what. It's just a matter of to what degree are they going to inherit it. Are they going to inherit it? They could have inherited it with a little less pressure at this point. So, you know, GM may be able to do some things to be able to hold out until the next administration shows up. Same for Chrysler, but what that will, you know, that was it's an uncertainty, and that's something that we'll have to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, talk some about how Mitch McConnell and Shelby and other Republican senators from the states that have the foreign automakers in mm-hmm. them. How much did that play into this?
Well, I'm sure they feel that they have the a good model for how the auto industry should be run. And it comes down to it was funny because the guy who was the senator from Tennessee, Senator Corker, who put together this alternative plan, and he says, well, we were down to three words, and he didn't say what those three words were, but one all of us could fit different kinds of words that would
could,
you know
yeah.
would have. Made us think that, you know, what kept it from go passing, and the three that came to me was break the union.
Yeah, yeah.
Because their philosophy is that, you know, unions are unnecessary, that, you know, that the world has changed and that unions are no longer serve their purpose.
The union workers at GM, Chrysler, Ford have been reported to be getting $74 an hour, but that's a misleading number, isn't it?
Well, it is a number that is true if you include their wages, their health care benefits, their vacations and pensions, all rolled into that. But the thing is that when you look historically, and this is a kind of a hobby horse I've been riding for the last week or so. If you allow me to tell this story,
okay.
It comes back to a couple of years, two or three years, in which the auto manufacturers have kind of been struggling to downsize their companies. They've been working at this for a few years, and they actually have had some success. And one of the ways that they've done this is something that I would call a corporate social responsibility. Mm-hmm. Whereas instead of just saying, okay, we're going to cut 10% of our workforce and it's you, and we go out next week, I'm going to look for people who are near retirement and offer them a package for them to retire early. And they would offer, and this was white collar and for blue collar, and they negotiated this with their unionized workforce and also and set it up for their white collar workforce over the last, you know, 2 to 3 years, and they have let go of tens of thousands of workers. So the auto industry has actually have been going through the process of restructuring over the last 2 or 3 years, and they've been doing it in a way that makes that really has the workers go out with some dignity, both white collar and blue collar. And it's something that actually I can see consider a model for how large companies could reduce their workforce when it comes to that. And I would like to hear of examples where any other corporate entity such as this actually did go through this.
Let's take another call. Kim in Oshkosh. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm calling in regards to your visitor this morning. I don't want to see anybody lose a job, and I understand there's, you know, probably hundreds of thousands of jobs attached to the big three. So, you know, that's a lot of jobs to be lost. But in the same breath, you know, I think the United Auto Workers do need to make some concessions, because would you rather have a job or would you rather not have a job?
I think that that is a very good point. When you look at what happened with the UAW during this transition that I was talking about, where they were, where the companies were what they call right-sizing, but other people would call downsizing their North American, their U.S. Workforces, they went through a negotiation in 2007. And at this point, the United Auto Workers said, you know, the companies really are in desperate straits, dire straits. We really have we have to come in with concessions. And what they did and what they negotiated with the big three was that they would, again, the same kind of situation where you have older workers getting buyout packages, so they would actually pay them a certain amount depending on how much seniority they had. And offer them early retirement with some benefits and, you know, health care benefits and of course their pensions, and they would leave, and then they would be replaced by people who were making half of what they were making. And this was about this is supposed to take place between 2007, and it's supposed to be completely implemented by 2010. And this is so what ends up happening, and this half of what they were going to make was actually, if I'm correct, going to be less than what the workers in the transplant factories would be making on their hourly basis. I think benefits would still be make it a little more, but still they would be close to on par with the transplant manufacturers. And this is what the UAW, I'm sure, was trying to talk to the Senator Corker, saying, yes, we already have this in place. It's in process right now. It will be completely installed by 2010, but he didn't want to hear that. He wanted to have it in 2009. And this is where I think part of the breakdown was. But what ends up happening is that it shows you that the UAW actually understood where the companies were. They also, during the hearings that they went through recently, said that they would also give up I don't know if they completely would eliminate it, but suspend this thing called the jobs bank, where if a worker was laid off, they would still get 80 to 90% of their pay. The manufacturers set this up, I think, in the 70s or 80s, because they would have a lot of layoffs. People would come and go, and they'd have to continue to retrain people. So they set up this jobs bank, and, you know, everybody says it was a UAW scam, but it was actually negotiated with the manufacturers. So it was, you know, the manufacturers had their hand in this as well.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we will be back talking with Bruce Belzowski, Associate Director of the Automotive Analysis Division at the University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. He's with us talking about the Senate last night rejecting the rescue package for the Detroit 3, saying no to $14 billion in loans. We're talking about what's next. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. As we just heard in NPR News, Wall Street is bracing for a plunge when it opens in about a half an hour, reacting to the news that the Senate has rejected the request for emergency loans for the Detroit automakers. We are welcoming your reaction to that news as well, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are talking with a guest about why the deal failed and what might be an alternative. Bruce Belzowski is Associate Director of the Automotive Analysis Division at the University of Michigan's Transportation Research Institute. Our next caller is Joan in Shorewood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. It seems to me that the first $700 billion bailout was given so very easily to the financial organizations and the banks that don't even produce anything at all. And there's been obviously no effectiveness or very little accountability, if any. And here we are, the Congress dragging its feet, led by the Republicans, against a $14 billion loan to the automobile industry that does produce something, produces jobs, produces cars. And there will be a ripple effect if this goes under in the loss of jobs. It just seems to me that the Republican senators want to force the automobile industry into bankruptcy, because the workers then are at the tail end of the line to collect, and they will lose everything. And this seems to me about destroying the unions and working harder and harder for cheap labor.
Yeah, you tend to agree with that, Bruce Belzowski?
In some ways, yes. It definitely is as I said, the three words that could have, from Mr. Corker, could have been break the union, because that was what he says was the deal breaker, and that was what's been coming out of the reports from the committees.
Yeah. Let's take another call. Mike in Appleton. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, good morning. Boy, I agree with your previous caller. It seems to me like the Republicans are shooting themselves in the foot with this one, and it's going to come back and bite them in the future. You had a guest on, I think it was earlier this week or late last week, who gave a really good explanation as to, you know, this $72 an hour that is talked about. He broke it down, and if you take away the legacy cost, the actual hourly cost for, let's say, Ford, GM, Chrysler, is very similar to, let's call it the U.S. Toyota. So if the problem is that, why not take these $14 billion or whatever and just simply take away the legacy costs from them and say, okay, we're going to take care of these workers. You know, we know exactly how many they are. We know exactly how long it's going to last that we have to, you know, pay this off. And, okay, now you guys are on a level playing field, and you got to make it work.
Well, then they'd need more than $14 billion, wouldn't they, Bruce?
Yes, they would.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd say if the... There are hundreds of thousands of retirees and their spouses who are part of the legacy costs that the UAW and the and this is both white collar and blue collar workers at the big three, and that's always been a challenge for them. It's one of the curses of being in business for 100 years. If you've been in business for 100 years, there'll be times where things were really good and things were really bad, and when times were really good, the workers would want some share of that positiveness, and that's what has ended up happening, and that the some of the legacy of those positive years has carried over, and so now they have hundreds of thousands of workers that are retired, that are that rely on pensions and health care benefits from the big three.
Yeah. Looking at a story on the Associated Press Wire this morning, the millions of Americans connected to the U.S. auto industry can only hope and watch what lawmakers do next now that the $14 billion bailout package has died in the Senate. Millions of Americans have their jobs at stake right now?
When the estimates range from something like 1.5 million to 3 million people who are connected to the auto industry, then you have the manufacturers, you have the suppliers, you have dealers and other tertiary companies that are connected with them, and if those companies go under, see, this also has an effect on the transplant companies, because many of those companies share the same suppliers. So if those suppliers actually go out of business, then the transplant companies will end up shutting down for certain periods of time as they try to find those parts, to replace those parts.
Our next caller is Dave in Spooner. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. Just a couple of things real quick. First of all, I've noticed that some callers, they call in and they complain about the Republican Democratic Party. And my view is, you know, we need to come together as American people and view it as that and try to solve this problem. Second of all, I just wanted to say, you know, for the UAW, I think they did the right thing. I know back in 1979, I believe it was 80, Chrysler got bailed out then, and I remember Lee Iacocca said he had to fire 75 VPs, vice presidents, for that company. I don't know what's going on here in these other corporations right now, but I find it appalling that, you know, you can have all this higher management making millions of dollars, and they want these auto workers that are supporting and making the company. They're the ones that are making this company work, and yet they want them to take a pay cut while they take a pay raise. I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you very much.
All right. Well, it was the Republican senators, though, that were insisting on those concessions from the UAW, right, Bruce Bell?
Yes, they are. Yes, they were. But it was interesting is that they didn't ask for any concessions from the executive.
Okay.
That was noticeably missing from the three things that they were showing. And I think the caller makes a good point.
Yeah. So anyway, though, the UAW was saying, hey, we'll do concessions, but not until our contract runs out.
They also said that, they also did say they would suspend the jobs bank, that would be a very significant concession. That's not an insignificant cost to the manufacturers. And as I said, over this period of time, they've also already changed over what they called, they had a two-tier wage system, where there are the people who are still there with the old wage system, but as new people come in, they get the lower wage, which is very similar to what the transplant manufacturers pay.
Well, Dave wants Republicans and Democrats and everyone to come together to solve this mess. So do you see that happening?
Well, I think that's the end of it. I think we reached the end of the line for this year with the Congress. So I think it can happen it can happen next year, but I think we're done with this year for the Congress. It's up to the administration at this stage.
And you are hopeful, though, that perhaps the administration, either through the, not so much maybe with that TARP money, but maybe through the Federal Reserve, might be able to issue a bridge loan to Chrysler and GM?
I just can't read the administration to tell for sure if they're really heading in that direction, if they're willing to do that, because they've always given mixed signals to the auto industry. During the Bush administration, they would try to set up meetings. The CEOs would go and talk to them about their restructuring plans, about what they were going to do, and they would put off meetings with them. They would set meetings with them, and then they would cancel them. And then they finally would meet with them, really late in the administration of the second 4 years. And so they really haven't been considered what you consider a friend of the auto industry, and the administration hasn't. But yet they worked with the Democrats because I think they felt that to create this bill, I think they felt that it was in the best interest of the country. That
sure.
they said we're at a point where we just need this bridge loan to get the companies a chance to restructure. And by the end of the first quarter, if they can't figure it out within that first quarter, fine, then we're going to move on with, whatever dissolution of the companies or whatever will happen. But so I think that they were in support of this short-term support for the companies.
Indeed, Dana Perino, in her statement yesterday speaking for the administration, was encouraging passage of this rescue package, encouraging Republicans to go along with the package, especially on a day when unemployment numbers came out again, showing how hard we're being hit by this recession, saying that the economy really can't take another hit like more unemployment due to the auto companies going out of business, and so they were saying pass this.
Exactly. They have been supportive of this bill, and really kind of short-sightedness on the Republicans' part on there in terms of what effects this might have on the economy.
We are wondering what the failure of the rescue plan in the Senate last night means for the automakers and the economy, and we welcome your questions for our guest, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. What do you want to see happen now? Some want the White House to tap the $700 billion Wall Street bailout money to help the automakers. Is that a good idea? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Hoping you'll stay tuned. Coming up after 8 o'clock, it's the Week in Review. We will welcome in Paul Sogland and Owen Robinson to talk with you about the news of the week. We'll talk more about this failed auto bailout, and we'll talk about selling a Senate seat. the scandal going on in our neighbors to the south, and much more coming up in our Week in Review after 8. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Friday, December the 12th. Right now we are talking with a guest analyst about what's next for the Detroit automakers, whether they can survive, what that failed bailout in Congress will mean for the rest of the economy. 1-800-642-1234 if you have a question, or send an email, talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Lance in Green Bay. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning. I guess I have a couple of comments. First off, this whole situation, I'm thoroughly disgusted with it. I mean, as far as Republicans, it's $15 billion. It's a drop in a bucket compared to what they've already spent. You might as well give it a try and see if it works. I guess my second thing is, you know, with unions where they're at now, I don't think there's really a need for them anymore. And I guess when they talked about, you know, the union workers, you know, getting paid that of non-union workers, what kind of cuts are they looking at exactly? I mean, can they still make a decent living with these non-union wages, or are they going to be in poverty? And I'll take the comments off the air. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bruce Belzowski?
I think that the wages that they will get with the new contract, the Tier 2 wage system, they will not have the kinds of luxuries that the current automakers may be able to afford, that's for sure. One of the things that's kind of striking, that when we talk about when the Southern senators talk about the wage control that they have in their plants in the South, one of the statements that I've been quoted on before is that the companies in the South, the workers in the South, in the auto companies, would not be making their money they're making today if it wasn't for the UAW. It was the competition with the UAW that forced the automakers, the foreign automakers, to come up with wages that were very close to what the UAW was paying, not in terms of benefits and vacations and things like that and pensions, but in terms of their actual wage. So it's kind of interesting to hear the senators talk about the low wages that they pay their workers, but really all those things were set up because of what the UAW is already paying their workers.
Yeah, don't the foreign automakers, again, they're building cars in this country, Toyota and Honda and BMW, don't they also get big government subsidies in the states where they build their plants?
They do to get the plants to those into those states. I think there was one article I read recently that Alabama, Senator Shelby's state, paid on average about $126,000 per worker for the plant that they put into the state in terms of incentives they gave the companies to locate there.
Next, we go to Mike in Milwaukee. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Joanne. Thanks for taking my call. It seems to me, if you look at Jaguar is a high-priced automobile niche company. But it seems to me that the U.S. automakers have become a moderately priced automobile niche market, which tends to still be dominant market players. If restructuring of the U.S. automakers is done correctly, and that would include eliminating its excess brands, excess production capacity, its excess line and corporate staff, and its excess dealers, among other things. And if that restructuring is done correctly, we're going to see that the big three is the little three, which is what it has been for a number of years.
What about that?
Well, the caller makes a good point. What the manufacturers have done, and this is where I really feel that they do, and they've accepted this fact now, but they wouldn't accept it for years, is that the big three made a lot of mistakes in terms of their product mix. They focused way too much on pickup trucks and large SUVs as money makers for them, and neglected the lower priced small and mid-size segments. And this is an area that they kind of ceded to the Japanese and the Koreans. And they have built a very good business case on those vehicles. And when fuel prices went up, it was those vehicles that the buyers wanted in the spring, and it wasn't the big three vehicles. So I think that the caller's right in that they really will need to, as part of the restructuring, focus more on cars rather than trucks.
Will they have to downsize so much that they really would be the little three?
Well, in terms of their market share of the U.S. market, they are. General Motors is still the largest manufacturer and seller of vehicles in the U.S., and I think Ford is still second, but Toyota and Honda are very close.
You know, I saw a piece on what it takes to shut down a brand or a model of car, like when Oldsmobile was shelved or whatever, canceled. That it costs a lot of money. You have to buy out the dealerships. It's not an easy thing to do.
It's the estimate that I heard was about $1 billion to close a brand. Now, but I think that if you're going through the kind of restructuring in the industry that we're going through now, I think that it won't be as expensive because the buyouts that they had to give to dealers in the past may not be available anymore. And that dealers, that there will be, you know, as part of the restructuring that the manufacturers will have to go through, there probably will not be the same kind of incentives offered dealers to they may be forced into more of a merger situation rather than forcing them to go out of business.
Yeah. Can you tell us what the future holds for the big three if the money comes their way, they get the money, the emergency loan to tide them over? What will the restructuring mean? What will the Detroit three look like in the future?
Well, remember that Ford is not really asking for this money.
Right.
So Ford is, they really won't have to go through the process that Chrysler and General Motors would have to go through. So General Motors would end up probably shutting down some of their brands, having fewer dealerships, just become a smaller company in the U.S. It'll still be a good-sized company, but it won't be as big. Chrysler will have to go through some of that same restructuring. Chrysler has always been a smaller company compared to Ford and General Motors, even though they were considered the big three. So Chrysler will have to do more, and they're trying to do this. They're trying to get a better mix of cars and trucks. But Chrysler, I don't beat them up as much as I beat up the other companies, because when they used to be owned by Daimler had this plan in place to merge with Hyundai and Mitsubishi, and these companies would provide them with small and mid-sized cars. So Chrysler didn't have to do this. Well, then those mergers fell through, and then Daimler sold the company. So Chrysler was left with no small vehicles, no development for small vehicles, and they really were on their own. And I think that was probably the worst case scenario for Chrysler. If gas prices had stayed the same, it probably wouldn't have been as bad. But when gas prices went up, they were completely left out in the cold in terms of small and mid-sized vehicles.
I've heard some suggest that GM and Chrysler should merge.
There are talks about that. There were some talks about this before the even I think in the October time frame. There's a lot of product overlap. There would be a lot of loss of jobs because the vehicles that those companies make are so similar to each other that you would see Chrysler. GM would probably keep the minivan, which is still a very successful brand for Chrysler, which GM does not have. Maybe the Jeep brand still has a lot of identity for product identity. That would be a positive for General Motors. But you know, their mid-sized cars they wouldn't need. They have very similar trucks. You know, in terms of the types of trucks they are. Why would you need both the Dodge brand and the other GM brands?
Let me jump in and get one more caller
okay.
on before we're out of time. Chris in Cottage Grove, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, guys. One question that I have for your guest is, out of all the workers in the industry, what would that make up as a percentage of total workers in the U.S.? Does he know?
No, I'm sorry, I don't know what percentage. I know that the automotive industry represents about 3%. 2 to 3% of all of the GDP in the U.S. when you include the manufacturers, suppliers, dealers, and any other tertiary companies connected with the auto industry.
So we're talking a fairly large percentage of the American workers there.
We are. We are, okay. In terms of, not maybe not as much, but definitely a good chunk of the economy.
Yeah, all right, Chris, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there because we're out of time. I want to thank you very much, Bruce Belzowski, for being with us, and you've got your fingers crossed or not?
Oh, of course.
All right. Thanks very much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Bruce Belzowski, Associate Director of the Automotive Analysis Division at the University of Michigan's Transportation Research Institute. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing the hour. Thanks to Bill Martins and to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. The Week in Review is coming up. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.